Are we recording? No, too much.
Hey everybody, welcome to Ducks Watch Together. I'm Josh.
And I'm Kylie.
And on today's episode, we talk about the top 5 children's animated television shows of all time.
Can I just start every episode by singing the DuckTales theme song now?
You can. Woo! You need to find a new co-host.
Why? You've not even seen the original, the OG.
Because this is our podcast, and so you gotta choose something that we've both seen. And because we haven't watched it together, it's not a Ducks Watch Together show.
None of them have hummable theme songs. There you go. Right there. X-Men.
Josh, why are we doing this?
Because I wanted to. We talked about DuckTales, and it just made sense that this would be the list that would pair with it. We started out saying that we're just going to do the top 5 animated shows of all time.
But then...
I was like, well, that's a really hard category. We should make it a list of 10. And Kylie said no. So I was like, what if we just did kids shows? And she said yes to that. So we're doing top 5 kids animated shows. And at some point, we will do adult animated shows. So basically, these are shows that are geared towards kids and or families.
Josh, you did a really good job there not using any extra hyperbole. Usually when you explain things, you make me out to be a monster.
But nobody wants to see Marshall no more. All they want to see is Shady.
I'm Chopped Liver. Well, if you want Shady, this is what I'll give you. A little bit of me.
Mixed with some hard liquor.
No. This is a children's episode, Josh.
Yeah! Alright, So, yeah, we get there. My list... Oh, wait, we'll get to the quid pro quos in a little bit here.
But first...
The Inquiry of the Half Fortnight!
Night.
Kylie.
Josh!
They are gonna make an animated cartoon out of your life.
Oh, my goodness.
They're gonna do it. That's gonna be great. However, they're like, Kylie, the only... thing that we're going to have to change one thing to make it work.
Okay.
You're going to have to be an animal. Which animal are you?
Snake.
Just to spite me? Does that make me a mongoose in your cartoon? Since we are enemies?
Oh, wait, let me think. Okay.
In this podcast for enemies?
Well, no, it's because we live in a desert, and I need an animal that can survive the desert.
Fair enough.
Josh, if anything, you're a swallow.
Why?
They make a lot of noises with their beaks.
I'm like a bird, I wanna fly away.
I don't know where my home is. I don't know where my soul is. Well, baby, all I need you to do... Yes.
Why doesn't the bird know where its soul is? Like, is it a soulless creature? Like,
yes.
Just flying around? Like,
that's another reason why you're the swallow.
Is it because I'm a ginger?
Way to bring hair color into this.
Yeah, okay. Jeez.
I feel like I'd be a good, so, specifically a rattlesnake, because I'll warn you before I get angry. Like, I feel like I give enough warning. Also, I like to wrap myself in blankets, and snakes wrap themselves in themselves, and they become their own blankets.
I think I'd be a bear. I just think I'd be a big, friendly bear.
If I answer this seriously, no, I like snake's a good one.
Snake's a good one, yeah, absolutely. I don't know how successful your series about a snake is gonna be, though.
Well, you're gonna be there. You're a swallow.
Fair enough.
And Anne will be there. She'll be a honey badger.
She'll be a cat.
No, Charlie will also be there. He'll play the role of a cat. But it'll be one of those cats, it'll be like Tarzan, where the big jungle jaguar thing doesn't talk, and Charlie won't talk in it. But he'll be there.
Charlie, you can talk in mine. You'll be my cat pet.
Feed me! Feed me! Let me sit on you! Let me sit on you! Feed me!
Everyone will be like, this cat's so needy.
And then it'll be like Tintin, because you'll just be like, Charlie! 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 Come here, Charlie! Charlie! Charlie!
Dog's name's Snowy, right? Snowy? Snowy? Nick! Nick! Nick!
Nick!
Captain Jack! Captain Jack!
Bark! 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 Bark!
If you want to answer the question, the inquiry of the Half Fortnite, you can do so on our Facebook page at Friend of a Friend Podcast. You can also do so on Apple Podcasts or iTunes, where you can leave us a 5-star review or any review, and we will read it on the podcast! You can even be like, 1-star! Yo, they suck! We'll read it. We'll read it out loud. Just because we want you to. But please don't do that. Just give us
Yeah, Kevin, why aren't you giving us a 5... Everyone else, please give us a 5-star review. Kevin, you can write a 5-star review before the next time I see you. I give some 2 weeks. Or a week.
I mean, technically, by the time that he hears it, if he listens to it on the day it drops, it gives him, like, 5 hours. Unless you drop it after trivia.
Children's shows.
Kylie, do you have any rules, provisos, couple of quid pro quos?
Yep.
Great, she does. Perfect, awesome.
I answered your question.
Alright, mine are...
So mine are...
Oh, you want to actually answer the question. I see how life is.
So there are things that I watched as a kid, but upon reflection upon myself and who I was like, no, these should not be for children. So while, they might have been presented at, possibly aimed towards children, I don't think their actual intention, an audience, was children. So I took all of those off.
Can you give an example or two?
Yeah, so... I had, some animes on here, specifically things like Samurai Jack and Naruto, both of which are animated, and they were shown on, Cartoon Network. But I look upon them, and I'm like, ooh, there you are dealing with some very dark themes in here that I don't know are so healthy for children. And then Samurai Jack, when it got rebooted and they finished the series, it ended up being specifically geared towards adults, and so that one kind of just felt like a hogwash in the end. And so I tried to keep it for a little less of mature audiences, and it had to be animated.
Great. Mine were, it had to be, the show was originally aimed at either kids or families, because I feel like a family-aimed cartoon is probably also in the same category as well, too. Mine is a DuckTales memorial list, because to me, my personal number one, and I believe what to be the best animated kids show of all time, is DuckTales. However, we just spent a whole episode talking about DuckTales and its new reincarnation, so I think that my thoughts are back there on DuckTales, on why it is... absolutely, hands down, one of the greatest, if not the greatest, children's animated television show of all time. Secondly, this is another one where I did categories, so I felt like even by narrowing it down to just kids' shows, I still had so many that I ended up just doing categories of production companies and or genres, and not even all of them got represented here, and some things didn't quite fit, and so just in general, they're kind of in some categories and genres, so...
I would like to make a quick comment real quickly.
Yeah.
I, at one point, said, Josh, you just want the episode, and you can talk about all of them. And you said, no... you can talk too.
I didn't say it like that.
So I offered Josh the opportunity to talk all he wanted.
Don't you always do that by setting up a microphone and then putting it out to the public? Isn't that just what this is?
Sometimes I interrupt you and I say, no, 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 no.
Yeah, I like it when you interrupt me. You have a unique thought and opinion that is good for people to hear. I just spout 90s child nonsense.
No, you also have some, like, insight.
I do, it's true. Have you learned anything from this podcast, Kylie?
Yes. What the and...
Top 5 things that Kylie has learned on the podcast. Number 5.
So I learned what noir meant.
Great. Number four.
What the ampersand, what the difference between an ampersand and an and is when you have writing teeth.
Great. Number three.
Josh is still living in the 90s.
Number two. If you didn't already know that one.
Josh is okay with physics being broken in movies.
Number one thing Kylie has learned while being on Ducks Watch Together.
Kevin has not yet, has never lived in Japan.
Kevin has lived in Japan.
No, he has not. No, he lied.
All right. Do you want to go first or want me to go first?
I'll go first. Okay. We'll get the bad ones out of the way.
Not the bad ones.
All right, boys and girls. If any of you have ever been listening to any of these episodes, you'll know I'm kind of like the little darker stuff. I like horror movies. I like kind of bizarre, odd things. So wasn't it very unsurprising when Kylie put Courage the Cowardly Dog on her list?
Oh, I like Courage.
Courage the Cowardly Dog is kind of a Twilight Zone-esque kind of show geared towards children, where they do venture into bizarre, strange worlds, and this is a show that doesn't have a through-line plot, where you can kind of just jump in at any episode, and they go on this kind of strange, weird, dark little journey. And I think that what I really liked about Courage the Cowardly Dog is that it was kind of pushing the bounds on kind of introducing scary things as a child, and just allowing me to experience these weird one-off stories. I think that the inclusion of having Mural and, oh man, I always want to say his name is Houston, but it's not Houston.
Muriel and Eustace.
Eustace, not Houston. I think that both of them, very different from one another, but they're just very funny and humorous and having Courage. He's just such a good character to follow. I think these are just great episodes, and it's a great show.
Really appreciated the way that that show told its stories, mm-hmm. in that sense of you knew that Courage was the smartest person in the house, and even though he wasn't always portrayed that way. And I think it was a really, really great match of animation and storytelling. I really like the way that it took some of those, like, Ren and Stimpy elements of, like, the kind of more realistic, grotesque animation, but then put it in a more animated spin, and I really enjoyed a lot of the animation of Courage the Cowardly Dog. It's a very, very fun show. Mm-hmm. 'Cause he's Courage the Cowardly Dog.
Some of those episodes were, like, they're disturbing. The slab where there's the 3D thing that's outside the house and it's just like, return the slab. And then
Oh, I guess that would be a good question of if you have a favorite episode of the series, you could mention the favorite episode too.
It's called Remember the Past. Remembrance of Courage Past, where it's actually kind of Courage's backstory, and you find out about his parents being taken away from him by this crazy veterinarian, and essentially we find him being an abandoned pup and how Muriel came to take him and find him. And it has such a depressing kind of background, but then you kind of understand where his love for these two people really comes from. Also, the scary one I was talking about is called King Ramsay's Curse, and that one's great. Josh.
Yes.
What's your number five?
Remember how right before we went on to record, I said I'm going to cheat? I'm going to cheat.
It's all getting cut.
It can't all get cut.
This episode will solely be me talking to nothing.
That's creepy. I have a tie.
Okay.
I have a tie at number five.
Okay.
So my categories are...
Okay. I was afraid it was going to be like the director-actor combination one where you spouted out like 15 different groups and like your number five was seven different collaborations.
It was good. It was awesome. I only got two this time. So the category we're talking about here is Disney animated shows. And I have two here because I think that they're both equally as important things there. Also, in terms of my list, I realized that I didn't have any real strong female characters highlighted. And I really wanted to make sure that there was one in there. So my number five is a tie between two Disney animated shows. Some of the things that this would have been the DuckTales spot, although it would have been at number one if it was at that spot. Some other shows that I thought about for this spot include Phineas and Ferb, Darkwing Duck, Recess, The New Adventures of Winnie the Pooh. They're all really good, but I eventually went with a tie between Kim Possible and Gargoyles. Two very, very different shows, but they're two very, very wonderful shows.
Those are basically the same show.
They're basically the same
Rufus
show.
Rufus is in both of them. Like, that's the prequel to Kim Possible.
Is that Rufus is in Gargoyles?
Yeah.
All right. I really like both these shows. I'm going to take them here a little bit one by one. Gargoyles is a show that aired as part of the Disney Afternoon block and is a really different, unique show for the time. It has a much darker tone. It has a much more serious plotting structure, and it's more of a drama. It's almost an animated drama than it actually is a show meant for children. And that's what I really appreciate about it. This story was really dark at times. The story allowed these characters to have feelings and emotions. And yes, it was at its heart an action series, but the characters were just so big and over the top. And I love that their animation, their style, their use of, obviously, because it's a very gothic, creation, it's a very gothic style show in the animation, and I think it uses the style really, really well. I think one of my favorite parts of the series is Keith David as Goliath. He is fantastic. The voice cast includes a bunch of well-known voice actors, including Jeff Bennett and Frank Welker. Ed Asner is also a voice in the series, and then there's Sally Richardson Whitfield, who played Elisa, but Keith David as Goliath really stands out as the real kind of heart and soul, and he was what led the show, and he's what made the show feel really unique and really epic. To the point where, after I was done growing up, Keith David was an actor who I was like, oh man, I love Keith David. I know Keith David. And I really hadn't seen a ton of Keith David stuff until, 4 or 5 years ago. And it was just because his voice was so familiar to me. And I think that he's just really fantastic and really great in everything that he does, including as Goliath. My favorite episode of this series is an episode called The Mirror. And it is a great episode in dealing with what it means to kind of be a gargoyle and what it means to, deal with having to protect the city while also trying to have people destroy you. And I think it's just a beautiful episode about exploring humanity through the eyes of this cartoon. It's a very deep cartoon. The second half of this is Kim Possible, and I love Kim Possible. Call me, beat me if you want to reach me. Boop. All right, Kim Possible. Who it was a show that aired very later on in Disney's run, kind of in 2000. It's like two-ish to, I don't know, 2000 something or other. 2 to 7. There you go. Kim Possible is the story of Kim Possible, and she is a super secret spy, but also dealing with the problems of being a teenage girl. It's kind of like Buffy the Vampire Slayer if it were animated. And about spies, and that's about it. I really enjoy Kim. I think that she's a really complex and really unique character, and that she deals with everyday problems while knowing to be a spy. I think what's really great about the show is not only is Kim really likable and really nice and really awesome, her supporting characters, filled with Ron Stoppable and Wade, I think were amazing. And then I loved her, like, rogues villains of, Shigo is the person I was thinking of, and Dr. Kraken, and there's just so many good villains that she has. There's a Kim Possible movie that's very, very strong that I love. I quite enjoy the fact that Gary Cole is the voice of her father. I'm like, that's awesome. I like the series a lot. I think that it's animated really well. I think that it uses modern technology in a way in animation that I don't think I'd personally seen before in terms of tech and cell phones and just in general kind of introducing that to the animation art form and style. And it feels and looks very much like itself, but also it establishes a whole new style as well too, which I really like. And I think some of my favorite episodes are actually near the end. I really like the episodes where she's graduating and everything's kind of wrapping up. The very end of the series is very strong there too. So yeah, Kim Possible and Gargoyles.
I watched one of those.
You watched Gargoyles?
No.
Call me, beat me if you want to reach me. Boop, yep. Boop, boop, boop.
Kim Possible was one of those, like, you watched the strong female getting to do things and getting to do something interesting. Like, that was one of the, those go into it, that goes into a very special place in my heart. And I did enjoy it as a child.
What were some things you enjoyed about Kim?
I liked the fact that she, while she was doing all of these things, and she was actively making the choice to put herself in danger like that to help save the world, it wasn't something that she was forced into, but she made that choice. It balanced that, it balanced her outside spy-ish adventurer life along with being a regular teenage person, especially a teenage girl, where it allowed her to be both and to mix both of those lives together. And it, she was never that stereotypical female who was strong and independent but didn't like anything feminine. Like, yeah. One of my biggest pet peeves about action movies is when we have women who, they essentially just take a woman character, they put that in there, but they don't give her any feminine qualities, or they don't even allow her to be a woman. She's essentially a man who's just there for, I don't know, face value. But I appreciate that Kim Possible felt like a fully realized girl also.
I agree. I absolutely 100% agree with that. And that's awesome. Cool, cool. Hey, what's your number four?
My number four is the Teen Titans TV show. Not to be confused with Teen Titans Go or whatever it's called. This is the one that ran from, I believe, 2003 to 2006. Somewhere around that time period. Something that I've always really loved about this is that the Teen Titans comic book series is one of my favorite comic book series of all time. And when I finally got to see this show, which the comic books and the show kind of were running, they revamped the Teen Titans comic right around the time that this show started. And it was interesting to be able to see pieces of the older comic books within this. And so what I really like is our five main characters feel like they've stripped the characters from the comics, but then they've made them more realistic and more dimensional. The five characters that we end up following are Robin, Starfire, Cyborg, Beast Boy, and Raven. And I think all of them are uniquely different, but you can see why they've come together and you get to see why they work so well as a team. And what I really have always appreciated about this is that it could have been a simple, we're going to make a superhero kind of a comic book one-off where you go on an adventure and you solve it. But the relationships within the show develop and evolve throughout the entire series, and these characters change. They're not all, the Starfire at the beginning is not the Starfire at the end. And you can say that about any of these characters. They've evolved and they've become more interesting characters. I think that this show also dealt with a lot of heavier kind of themes and heavier themes than a lot of other kids' shows were ready to do, but they never did it in a too violent way or too hard to handle.
Mm-hmm.
Certain storylines from this, including the Judas contract, which is not called that in the show, but if you know the comics, they do a great run with that storyline, and they have the whole Trigon arc. I think that those are two beautifully done arcs that kind of show what these characters are facing and who they truly are as people and how far they're willing to go for each other. My favorite episode of this series is a one called Haunted, where Robin is being haunted by Slade, who is one of the, he's the essentially the big boss in the first season.
Nice. I don't think I've ever seen an episode of Teen Titans, although I know many, many people who love it and talk about it.
Josh, I have the whole series. We can watch it. We can do an entire show on that. We'll just do an episode on the Teen Titans TV show, all three seasons. I got that. We could, let's do it. Okay. All right, Ducks. Now we gotta go right now because we gotta watch them all.
Yikes. I guess we do.
And I mean, like, there are parts of this, this isn't the tightest show. Like, there's no, we don't start from point A and we get to point B at the end. It is kind of like there are the filler episodes, but I think that most of these do give us a chance to understand these characters and get to see them interacting in a fun and exciting way.
Nice. Very cool. I think at some point I should go back and watch Teen Titans. I have a superhero category that comes up later.
Don't worry, we're gonna dip our toes back into it in a bit.
Yep, because I have a superhero category that comes up later.
Like, is it the Iron Man series that ran in 1989 or whatever?
No, it's Wolverine and Friends.
Oh, awesome.
Yeah.
is it the new Spider-Man starring Drake Bell?
No, why would I do that? Don't be ridiculous.
Is it Friends?
It's not Friends.
My favorite superhero Your favorite animated superhero show,
Friends. All right. My number four is... Okay. My number four is one of the classic cartoons of all time. It is probably considered... It's one of the first cartoons that we all watched growing up. And I thought about going back and talking about some classic Mickey Mouse cartoons and stuff like that. And I thought about doing some classic... things along those lines, but for me those are a little bit differently in terms of they're more shorts and they're not necessarily a show, but what was presented to me in show form for the first time that I've seen them, even though they are also shorts and similar, but I think they just permeate the culture a slightly bit more than some of those classic Mickey Mouse, Daffy Duck, goofy cartoons, is the Looney Tunes. So my number four of all times is Looney Tunes. Not the Looney Tunes show that aired on Cartoon Network, but just the Looney Tunes shorts in general. And they, at least growing up to me, they were presented in half an hour blocks, putting two or three of them together to create things, to create a whole half an hour of television. So you get stuff, you know, the Looney Tunes characters that we're talking about, Bugs Bunny, Daffy Duck, Porky Pig, Tweety, Sylvester, Roadrunner, Wile E. Coyote, Yosemite Sam, Foghorn Leghorn, Elmer Fudd, Marvin the Martian, the singing Top Hat Frog, so on and so forth. They're very much a Warner Brothers staple. And yes, some of these cartoons are problematic, and absolutely that is a true story, and I think when we're having this conversation that, you know, we have to and need to discuss that, you know, they're not always the most sensitive in terms of race and gender and homophobia and in terms of those things, and they're also very violent and sometimes graphically violent. I grew up watching these cartoons, and I will say that with enough healthy conversation, enough healthy dialogue, that anything can be seen for what it is and the value of what it is. Now, Chuck Jones, who was the creator of the Looney Tunes cartoons, I think is a master animator. I think that what he brings to the art form of animating, there is a Captain Christian video on Chuck Jones's animation on YouTube that's Captain Christian, both with K's, that are very, very, it's a very good watch as to what Chuck Jones brings and does to the animated form. And I think that while there are many, many great episodes, there's a couple of them in particular that I really, really love. And one of them's a Bugs episode and one of them's a Daffy episode. As I think Bugs and Daffy are probably the two of those characters that get... They're probably the most culturally penetrative, at least. The first one is the Rabbit of Seville episode, which I think is actually called What's Opera Doc? Why are you making noise? Stop making noise.
Okay, I'll stop talking. God.
Not you, the laptop.
Oh my gosh. Do you hear this, audience?
Shut up.
Do you hear hear this, audience!
The Rabbit of Seville is, I think, a really important episode because it takes Bugs Bunny and puts him in an opera, and he's gonna outdo Elmer Fudd in this opera situation. But essentially what Disney's Fantasia does for some classic music, some really classical scores, this does the same as well, too, from Ride of the Valkyries, which is the main use there, and to some other themes from The Barbers of Seville, and it's using a lot of Wagner and Maltese, and just, in general, really uses those classical scores to help elevate the storytelling. And I think that it's just an absolute genius piece of cartoon storytelling. And the only thing that beats it is from 1953. And it's my favorite all-time one. It's the one I think of the most. And it's called Duck Amuck. And this was the first time. So in this cartoon, it starts out as a pretty standard Daffy Duck cartoon. He's going around doing things, getting angry. And then all of a sudden the animator decides that he wants to change things. So he starts like erasing things or rewriting things. And then there becomes this weird interplay throughout the whole rest of the cartoon between Daffy and the animator. And so it gets to the point where the animator is like erasing his whole world and drawing him in new ones, or like erasing his body and drawing him with a new body, or, you know, drawing him in a new art style. And it becomes this really what we would call just meta conversation between what it means to be an animator and what it means to be a cartoon, and how that, and it explores that relationship, even if in a dark way of like sometimes it's fun to just torture your creations. It's really interesting, and it's really funny, and it's really unique. And there's like a Shyamalan-y type twist at the end of who the animator ends up turning out to be, but I think it's really fun. It's Bugs. So like Bugs is just messing with Daffy.
Yeah, you didn't know that Shyamalan watched that episode and he was like, that's what I'm gonna be. Oh, sorry, I did that with a little too much emotion. That's what I'm gonna... Too much emotion. I have this...
She's Kylie.
That's what I'm going to be.
But yeah, I think that for many cultural reasons, the Looney Tunes is a wonderful cartoon and it's a good show. And yeah, I think as an important cultural touchstone, the Looney Tunes deserves to be on this list. And just have conversations with your children or with people about like, hey, this stuff isn't totally true anymore, or this is a purveying thought or idea. That doesn't mean the art or the artistry isn't good anymore. And if we start to shun and go away from things that are artful and things that are well-told stories and things that are moving away from culture because of culture's past idea on race, gender, sexuality, all those things like that, we're going to lose two things. First and foremost, we're going to lose the art and the culture and the storytelling that was there that is not centered around all of that. And secondly, you're going to lose an opportunity to talk and discuss about how culture changes and how what this part is wrong and we now can be better about life. And if you start early with these conversations, kids will be open to looking at things in different ways. Just my two cents.
Nice. I've never seen an episode of Looney Tunes. I've seen Space Jam, so... Oh,
there you go. Space Jam's great. There is... I have a collection back there. It's got most of my favorite ones on there.
But I've seen Space Jam already.
That's not as good.
I saw it.
Did you all see Looney Tunes back in action?
No. I was one and done.
Can I take a moment here, Kylie?
Okay.
To show you this. This is what Jaden Smith looks like now. He did this to his teeth. He willfully chose.
Can you pop it out or is it there forever?
I don't know. I really hope that it comes off and on. But he's like, you know what I want? A grill.
Are those even in style anymore?
I don't... Maybe he's trying to bring them back? There's a lot of privilege going on with this choice right here. Will, maybe you should have been a better papa. Not just a good movie star.
Speaking of...
Sorry, I just saw it and I was like, I have to...
Will Smith and Jaden.
Yeah.
And M. Night Shyamalan.
Yeah.
You know what my number...
Number three, After Earth!
The animated series. Alright, so what I like about After Earth, the animated series, is that we kind of get these hybrids of all these different creatures, and we get to see how our interactions with the environment has really destroyed the Earth, and it's just After Earth now. Josh, what are your thoughts?
After Earth is not a cartoon.
Okay, my number three is actually, it's not that well known of a show, but we are approaching, next summer will be the 10th anniversary of its finale, and that show is called Avatar, The Last Airbender.
Oh, that show, you know, that not well known show.
That's why I brought up M. Night Shyamalan. I was planting the seed.
Ah, there you go.
Avatar The Last Airbender, I think that it does a very good job of being this very tight story and this very tight show. And that's not to say that there aren't filler episodes or there aren't kind of moments where it doesn't seem as necessary, but what I really love about this show is that from episode one, we essentially know what we have to do, and we know what the end goal is, and it takes its time through these three different chapters to be able to have Aang go through this journey to prepare himself for the final goal that he knows that he has to complete. And so, from that, we get these very strong and very interesting characters, from Aang and Katara and Sokka, and to my favorite character in the entire show, which is Toph. And even having Iroh and Zuko, those are all very strong characters that this show gives enough time to all of them, and it lets us see them change as people. And I think that the show really uses animation to its ability with the way that it shows all of the bending that's happening. And what I appreciate about it is that all four of the different benders come from a different form of martial arts. From waterbending, you get Tai Chi, and earthbenders focus on Hunga, Kung Fu. And then firebenders are Northern Shaolin Kung Fu, and airbenders is based off of Bajazhang.
Mm-hmm.
And so I think that this show uses animation to its full ability to give these characters these powers and having them do incredible things. And I think that overall, it's just a very tight-knit, great story to watch, and watching these characters come together.
Well, and I think it's an emotional story, and I think that's what holds it through to me, because not only is the animation stunning, like, this is one of the most well-animated shows that I can ever even imagine thinking of. And it's done so in a way that it mixes Japanese and American styles, which Japanese animation and manga and anime, not something that I care for. But the way it's used in Avatar The Last Airbender is perfect to just tell the story. And then by the time you get to book two...
They're books.
They are books. And they go to the city. What is the giant city? remember right? What the name of the city is. But...
I always just call it the Earth Kingdom.
Right. Anyway, I just want to go live in the Earth Kingdom, like the Earth City. Like, it's just such a cool place to be and feel in, and just the way this world is... I love the way the animators have and the creators have made a world that feels like you want to go live in it.
Ba Sing Se,
there it is. King Bumi. I love King Bumi. He's a great character. Aang is such a wonderful character, and Katara and their relationship and as it flourishes, and Katara's brother's name, you just said it. It's
Sokka.
Sokka is a wonderful foil to everything. Not bad foil, like a comedic foil in lots of ways. And then the story with Zuko, I didn't think I was going to care for the story with Zuko. I was like, whatever, I don't care. Pouty little fire baby. Like, wah. But then just the way that his uncle cares for him so much that you then in turn are like, oh, well, maybe there's a reason. And maybe there, like, it just, it's really beautiful. It's a really wonderfully told story and a very beautifully done cartoon.
My favorite episode is from book two called Bitter Work. And this is one of the first episodes where Aang starts learning how to become how to earthbend. And just, they're watching Toph trying to teach him and trying to have him understand, because essentially he's about to go into a world that is the exact opposite of what he knows, because earthbending is the opposite of airbending. And essentially just watching her trying to get him to understand and trying to get these different viewpoints. That's also the episode where we get a very strong connection between Iroh and Zuko, where that's really the one where Iroh is no longer viewed as just like this comical older man that's going along with it, but he becomes a very wise, very important figure in that episode. And I think that that's the one that best displays his character. I think it displays the relationship that's going to come from Aang and Toph together. It shows Katara again being kind of that motherly figure.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that overall it's just great.
I think my favorite episode, oh man, there's so many that are good. It's in book two. I love the emotional end of book three,
mm-hmm.
but I think book two is the strongest overall. I think that for a lot of the reasons you were just saying about the characters and their relationships and stuff like that. It's probably the last episode of that season, which is called The Crossroads of Destiny. And everything mm-hmm. kind of comes to a head, and as within most, end of chapter twos, like, problems aren't completely solved, and you know, you actually are kind of often in a little bit, end up in a worse position than where you started, and it's just a really good episode that not only wraps up everything that was coming in front of it, but also sets the series off on its final course really, really well and really, really interestingly. So
I mean, that choice that Aang has to make with Katara, and you're just like,
yeah,
oh.
Yeah, it's beautiful. It's gut wrenching. It's all of the above. Yeah. Awesome. My number three, Kylie, is my Nicktoons spot, my Nickelodeon show spot. So
my Nickelodeon's coming next, too. Woo!
That was a Nickelodeon one?
Sorry, I always separate it from Nickelodeon.
But it's a Nicktoon in the way that, you know, everything else.
You're right, it is. But yeah. I always separate it from it. I'm always like, yeah, Avatar on the Avatar channel. Avatar the Last Airbender. I'm sorry, if I say Avatar, then James Cameron might come after me.
Yeah,
him, right. And his stupid
blue creatures. It's okay. He just remade Ferngully and called it Avatar.
He remade American History. Where did they came?
Yes, fair. So Avatar would have totally been on my list, but I figured it would be on Kylie's list, and therefore I wanted to have room for other things, so it is not necessarily on my list. However, I do think it absolutely agree and does belong on a list.
It took me a long time to actually pick. So in the sense, Avatar the Last Airbender and Dragon Ball Z are two very similar stories. Like, mm-hmm. the skeletons of them are pretty similar, and so I kind of went back and forth between which one of these am I going to put on the list, and I ended up choosing Avatar because the characters change, and it's tight-knitter, and...
Well, it tells a story, and at least from what I know, and Dragon Ball fans might come kill me, but Dragon Ball kind of does that thing that a lot of cartoons
I'm going to murder you. Sorry. No, you're fine.
Does the thing where a lot of cartoons do, where while it's good and interesting, the characters don't necessarily have a ton of emotional or character growth over the course of the series. There's obviously little things that happen that keep it pushing forward, but nothing to the level of Avatar.
Yeah, Goku doesn't change.
Yeah.
And the thing is that in Dragon Ball Z, if anyone dies, it's fine. We just gotta go get the Dragon Balls and we'll bring them back to life. We got this.
Great.
There's never really any stakes.
Stakes, they're real high. Great. So my Nicktoon, so this is my spots that I use for Nicktoons, and Nicktoons started around in the early 90s, so definitely there's a generation there, and there's a lot of really, really good ones starting from there through forward. Others that I considered besides Avatar The Last Airbender were Rugrats, Rocko's Modern Life, Ren and Stimpy, I thought were all really great shows. Fairly Odd Parents for something that's not new, but at least newer, I think is doing well. I don't actually like SpongeBob. I don't think it's good at all. And I think that its humor is immature and not in a smart kind of way, but in a really dumb kind of way. In a way that, like, I'm sorry, I'm going to be alienating people left and right with this sentence, but I feel like it's the SpongeBob people that grow up to be the Family Guy people, and I was like, great, you're watching the same show, and it's not clever in any way, shape, or form. So, that's my 2 cents on those two shows. But what is on my list is my number 3, my Nicktoon representative, is Hey Arnold. I really like Hey Arnold, and I realize that's a redundant sentence that I say a lot to start out my list, because it's on a list. But however, here it be. Hey Arnold is a wonderful show. I think that it's beautifully animated in terms of showing what a city block can be, and how that city and that small area, that small 2 to 3 blocks of an area of growing up in a city, is a kid's world. And that's all that's in it, is what their families are and what they go through. And I say the word families because at the core of its being, Hey Arnold is about family. It's about what your family is and who you allow to be in that family. And that could be your friends, that could be your mom and dad, that could be your grandparents, that could be, you know, in Arnold's case, his grandparents and the people who live in the boarding house that are very, very important to him. I appreciate that it talks about how a community comes together to raise children in lots of ways. And, you know, in dealing with whether it be at the school or the local butcher or, you know, the episode where the kids want to build a baseball diamond and they're like, no, we clean up this whole lot. And then the adults come in and they're like, well, thanks for doing all this work and now it's going to take us. And they all learn from each other that, like, you got to put in the work if you want to do the thing. I think that Harold's message is beautiful. I think it's one of the shows that, out of all of the cartoons that I watched growing up, that I just love to go back and rewatch, because it's about the simple things in modern times. You know, it is a very modern show in lots of ways, and so, except for, you know, the dad's the beeper king of New York or whatever, but that's fine. Or Portland. It's technically supposed to be Portland. So the creator grew up in and around Portland, Oregon, and that's the city that he ended up wanting to create was Portland, although his animators thought it would be more relatable if it looked more like a New Yorkish skyline. So he's always said that it's kind of the Portland block of New York, is what he had said. But yeah, I think the school is, or the show is, really beautiful in terms of what it has to say about being a family and being a friend. Some of my favorite episodes, I love, it's a later episode, it's called Parents Day, and it's where everyone's parents come to have a competition at the school, and Arnold learns that his grandparents are just as good as anybody else's parents. I love Stoop Kid.
Stoop Kid never leaves the stoop!
Stoop Kid's afraid to leave the stoop. That's a great episode about learning to accept others. But
I like the Pigeon Man.
The Pigeon Man episode is amazing. I love the Pigeon Man episode. But I'm a sucker for a Christmas episode, and there's a Christmas episode.
Oh my gosh! No! 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 No!
Do you want it? Do you want it?
No! No! This is like the most heart-wrenching episode ever!
Yeah, so like, Arnold is like searching for a gift from Mr. Oh, how do you pronounce
Hong.
His name? Hong? And it's H-A-Y-U-N-H.
I think it's Han,
yeah. And he just wants to be reunited with his daughter, and she's somewhere out there, and it's just like, that they go try to, it's good. Okay, this episode's really good. And then Helga learns to be a little bit less of a jerk. I like that episode.
It's the real meaning of Christmas.
It really is. Anyway, Hey Arnold, it's a beautiful show. It definitely should exist in your hearts and minds, and if I could ever find it on DVD, I would own all of Hey Arnold.
I gotta compose myself for a minute.
Yeah, sorry, I brought up the Harold Christmas episode. Arnold's Christmas. It airs in the first season. Arnold's Christmas, which is like the 7th episode of that series.
Let's punch them in the stomachs.
Yeah, right? But that's what I like about it. It wasn't ever afraid to be funny, but it was also never afraid to be emotional. It was never afraid to be like, things in the world are not always easy, children.
Speaking of a show that was like, hey, boys and girls, life's not always easy. My number two is a Nickelodeon show called As Told by Ginger. Huh. As Told by Ginger is one of those shows that I felt like, when it was on, most people weren't talking about it, and especially people at my age. They didn't seem to really care for it. But I think that this show is such an interesting look at what it means to be a young girl growing up and to have all of these life lessons within these shows. This is a very... The life lessons are literally spoken to us through the character of Lois, who is Ginger's mother. But I think that they're great life lessons and they're very realistic life lessons. These life lessons are things that real people face, and especially it is catered more towards problems that girls face. There are episodes about a girl who is embarrassed by the size of her breasts, and so she stuffs her bra in order to make her look like she has bigger breasts. It's a very realistic thing, and watching Ginger having to deal with this and to grow up and to deal with being a social ostrich.
Social ostrich.
To being being ostracized from social circles. I think that it's very realistic and it's very heartwarming to see that there are people who are going through similar things that you're going, especially when you're at that age. I think that it has great life lessons. It has a great message about just being yourself and allowing yourself to be weird or to be funny or to be whoever you are, and I think that that's why this show has always stayed with me as much as it has. My favorite episode, and one of the episodes that really clinched that I was like, yeah, this is a great show, is this episode called And She Was Gone, which is about Ginger writing this poem, and it's a darker poem, and everyone just then assumes that she has depression, and they put her into this kind of category of just being one of the depressed kids, and she goes through group therapy and everything, and she learns that people don't get to decide how she feels about things, and that's such an interesting and important lesson that this children's show is bringing up depression, it's bringing up eating disorders, it's bringing up all of these different topics, and it's making it in a very realistic way where it doesn't make growing up terrifying, it makes it more real. It makes you feel like other people go through the same things that I'm going through. Sold by Ginger is the greatest show ever made.
A social ostrich, as defined by UrbanDictionary.com, is a person...
That's literally what you've been doing!
A person who avoids and or ignores social problems to any extent possible. In used in a sentence... John is being a total social ostrich right now. It's really frustrating.
Do you know why that's what it's called?
A social ostrich?
Yeah, because they stick their heads in the ground and they don't know what's happening.
Yeah.
Anyways, so Told by Ginger is a great show. No one watched it.
I'm sorry, you were so very... We were so very, like, into it and just like, yeah. And then I was like, here, let's talk about social ostriches. I have never seen an episode of As Told by Ginger. I know it exists. Mm-hmm. But that's about it. I can't say that I really like it because I've not seen it.
I mean,
so I want to now after hearing about some of the things.
And but, I know that it's much more catered towards younger girls because...
Well, I mean, to me, that wouldn't necessarily stop mm-hmm. me from watching it because I watched a lot of shows with female leads and I was on board with them. I think the show came out as I was older.
Yeah, it came out at
and
a...
So...
It, like, this is one of those ones where they were like, let's stick this in between SpongeBob and Jimmy Neutron. Let's have something a little bit more serious. And it felt a lot different than what Nickelodeon was presenting at that time. And I think that it was just one of these.
The animation reminds me a lot of the Wild Thornberries.
Mm-hmm. It's very similar in that sense. I'm a little seal girl living in the Sears. I think it's SeaWorld.
I am a seal girl. I'm so lost without fish. I guess I was wrong for dancing on this stage. I don't really.
Seal girl lives on.
Seal girl lives.
Okay.
Hashtag seal girl lives.
Josh.
Hashtag seal girl.
That's my favorite superhero, seal girl.
Not Quail Man.
No, I didn't watch Doug. It was pretty much wiped off of the face of Nickelodeon by the time.
Well, yeah, because they sold the rights to Disney, and so Disney then made the New Adventures of Doug, which are not great.
I'm sorry. Josh, what's your number two?
My number two is my superhero genre.
Okay.
So, in this, I consider the 90s animated Spider-Man and X-Men, both which were really great shows. But I have a real home base for superhero animated shows, and that's the superhero shows that were on when I was growing up. And it's nothing against the contemporary ones. I've seen a couple of them that I've enjoyed, and I think that they're a little too... kiddish?
Yeah, because, I mean, like, superheroes are such a normalized part of our society and culture now.
Yes.
They present superheroes to all groups, and so, like, there's superheroes for every age group now.
Whereas, I still feel like growing up, they were very much... I mean, the show that I'm going to talk about is probably the show that is representing of the genre, especially for the 90s. But even still, it felt very niche in the sense of that who it was for and what it was for and what the stories it was telling. So the show that I have as my number two is Batman the Animated Series.
Crossover!
Ooh, that means that it's your numero uno. Great. Batman the Animated Series is an amazing television show. I mean, it kind of, as it goes on in its run, it loses a little bit of its steam, but in its first season or so, which is like 50 episodes, it's real strong. The character of Bruce Wayne and Batman are just so engaging and so interesting to watch. This, to me, is the most pure form of Batman and what he represents, and in terms of outside of the comics, this, I think, is the best adaptation there's ever been of that character, and I think it will stand as some of the best of that. Kylie, why for you is this on your list?
So I think that one of the more interesting things about the character of Batman is that he can be how many adaptations there are and how different eras really accept adaptations of Batman, and I think that what it does is it tends to focus on something that we necessarily don't focus on as much with some of these other Batmans, and that's kind of the dichotomy between Bruce Wayne and Batman himself. And I know that, like, these movies are going in for more like, he's twisted, he's plagued by the death of his parents, and this show, it has those things.
It has those elements, yeah.
But you know what? Bruce Wayne is also a different person other than just...
It allows him to be more well-rounded.
Mm-hmm. And I think that how it has all of those episodes within the first season, it gives him time to be able to interact with others and to be able to, like, be a fully fledged person. I think that him with Alfred and him with those who... him with those who are around him are just these great looks at not just Batman, but also Bruce Wayne getting to be a person. Another reason is that this is probably one of the better interpretations of the Joker. And then I'm going to kind of remove the Nolan thing because that's Nolan's interpretation with the Joker is a very different one.
Nolan and Ledger.
It's, yeah. Yeah, it's a very specific time period one, but I think that this version of the Joker, very Silver Age Joker, but he's still fun and he's still able to get laughs and he is still a menacing villain. He's not just like, I'm gonna murder people villain. He's...
I think he's, when I still think of the Joker, I think you're right, that to separate the Nolan Ledger version of the Joker, because he almost seems like Joker in name only. Not that he's not a great character or an amazing character, but to what the Joker is and would be and still is, I think this series wraps it up really nicely. And Hamill understands who that character is, that he's a madman. He's looking for, that he's out for chaos, and he's out for, you know, those elements that create the most amount of chaos in his and Batman's life. And he understand, I think what's great is that both characters, all the characters, in order to have a successful Joker, you need to understand that the nuts and bolts of those characters is that one doesn't exist without the other. Batman and Joker are the extreme foils of each other, and that's played out really well in this series. I think the animation is gorgeous. It's very dark. It's very, again, using some gothic elements similar to what we talked about with Gargoyles. But the characters are well defined, and they're, to me, when I actually think about Batman, I think about this series more than I think about even comics at the time. Now, that to be fair, growing up, I read some Batman, I read the important Batmans, but I was a Marvel kid, so this was my entry point into Batman. I mean, anyway, this and Keaton's, you know, the Burton Keaton Batman era. And that's, to me, always going to be this wrapped up all in there. And it exists in the same universe because it uses the same John Williams theme song. It's score, some episodes are even scored by Williams just to give it a feel. It's very much of that era. And to me, that's the most pure era of Batman that I love.
And so the 89 Batman comes out before this, and while they kind of have similar feelings, I think that they're also totally different. I think that Mark Hamill knew that he couldn't just
do Jack Nicholson.
Yeah, he couldn't Jack Nicholson it. He had to create another character and a different character, and I think that he did a very good job of separating himself from Cesar Romero and from Jack Nicholson.
Yeah, Joker is a really interesting character, and I think when you see a lot of these characters that get played by multiple actors, Joker being one of the more prominent ones, there's lots of successful versions. There's probably actually more successful versions than unsuccessful versions.
For the Joker. Yeah, there's one unsuccessful one.
Jared Leto.
Yeah. I mean, within the animated realm, most of them end up working. There are a few
for the most part, from what I've seen, they all just try to do Mark Hamill.
Yeah.
Like, he just made it iconic. Like, that's the animated Joker.
Other than Mark Hamill, the other Joker that I really like is Joe DiMaggio.
He's really good, too. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And I think that he plays within the realm of Mark Hamill, but he also adds a little bit of flair to it. Yes,
agreed with that. Yeah.
I think that this is also the best use of having a Robin within a Batman story. Yeah. Even within the comics, there are times where you're like, oh, Robin, But I think that this one does it well. And having Dick Grayson is just... I think that he's a good addition without ever overshadowing the Batman.
I also think it's a good use of Barbara Gordon as Batgirl as well, too.
Oh, she's great.
I think in a lot of ways, this series becomes the template for almost all future animated Batmans kind of moving forward as well, too.
Yeah.
Favorite episodes?
Oh, man, I don't know.
I was trying to think of even my favorite Joker episode, and it's really hard. Like, there's so many good ones.
The one that always sticks out whenever I think about this, I always think about the Poison Ivy Harley Quinn episode.
That's a great episode.
Because it allows Harley Quinn to be a character isolated from the Joker, which is always refreshing to see, and it also creates... It allows two female villains to join together and to try to outwit Batman.
One of the things that I like about this show, especially in season one, is when it introduces all the major villains, you kind of get these almost big two-part episodes. And they're not all two parts, but a lot of times they are. And you get to understand why they are who they are, which I think is such an important step that a lot of shows and adaptations miss.
I also really...
And so, one of my favorite episodes in there, sorry, I just wanted to finish that up there, is Heart of Ice. I think it's an amazing episode.
The introduction of Mr. Freeze.
The introduction of Mr. Freeze, which then, into the point where, if I'm right on Batman lore, Heart of Ice is actually the first time where we get his backstory to be that it's his wife. And then that's the backstory that is carried forward and ruined 5 years later in Batman and Robin, which is so interesting to me that it starts here with Heart of Ice, which is actually this beautiful emotional episode that I watched over the summer with my nieces and cried. And they're like, "What are you? Why are you sad?" I was like, "It's just really sad, you guys." And they love the show. I think one of the things that I love about the show is its cross-generational appeal. Like, it was Superheroes Week, and they were all on board with, they loved getting up every morning and watching Batman the Animated Series. It's something they'd seen, it's something they like. It is still an iconic portrayal of Batman.
I'll raise you one, and I'll do the introduction of Joker, Riddler, which is called, "If You're So Smart, Why Aren't You Rich?"
I love that episode, too.
And so, that one... Also, okay, so we have the Batman 66 show, which some people are like, "Oh, it's so campy." It wasn't campy the first time I watched it. I was like, I have to pay my library fine because Batman told me to. He gave me a speech on why it's important for me to be an active member of society, so I need to do this.
Here's the genius about Batman. The genius about that character is it's been so many different things in culture that it can be whatever you need it to be. And the fact that I think that if you show Batman to kids, like ages like 3 to 7, that's perfect for the 66 Batman, you know? I think it works. And then when they get a little bit older, show them the animated series. And then start showing them when they get to their late teens, you can show them the Nolan stuff. And I just think that he can grow and change and be with you to the point where I remember having gone through so much of his stuff. Obviously, I didn't have the Nolan stuff, but Batman had been so many things that by the time that like stuff like The Killing Joke and The Long Halloween come out, you're just like, or you get to them when you're older or whatever, you're just like, "Oh my gosh."
And so we have these 66 where we do get to see some of these more classic villains, and Riddler's in there, and he's a hyperactive. He's pretty similar to actually being the Joker in that, but yeah. Like, this show makes him stable, and it makes him a much more, like, menacing villain. And I think that Riddle is my favorite Batman villain.
The Riddler is also my favorite Bat villain. We've never said that out loud before, but that is a true story.
Riddler is great.
Yes. And it's because of this series. Mm-hmm. I mean, I will defend Jim Carrey and Batman Forever as being a weird, wonky, like, version of the 66 Riddler, but this series is why I like the Riddler. Mm-hmm. I mean, I've not followed Gotham, but their, at least, Riddler attempt at the very beginning was kind of interesting. I don't know where it's went to or if he's become the Riddler yet, but...
Yeah. I forgot Gotham was a thing.
I know, right? Just till this moment.
Let's do an episode.
Oh my gosh, let's catch up on watching Gotham.
The show. Oh my gosh, let's catch up and watch Gotham.
Okay, so I got...
There was a thing that you used to do where you were like, "I'm going to watch all these superhero shows once a week and I'm on Facebook, I'm going to tell you how they went." And then that happened a little bit and then it was just...
And then I got busy. I will say that I watched the first season in its entirety and then I watched... I don't know, some of the second season. There's just so much superhero television show, and it's pretty average, though there are some characters that I like. There are some that I hate. I'm looking at you, Fish Mooney. I'm looking at you.
I'm Kylie.
I wasn't looking right at you, I was looking at Fish. You want to do some honorable mentions?
Sure. Oh, Christopher Lloyd's wife had was Harley Quinn. On Batman the Animated, I didn't know that. Okay, my honorable mentions are Yu-Gi-Oh, Rugrats, Samurai Jack, and Dragon Ball Z. Although, I don't know if any of those are actually for children.
Great.
Some of them might not be.
I will have Animaniacs on there. I will have Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles, the animated series. One of my categories that I didn't have time for, or just didn't have spots for, was my Cartoon Network one. And though I think Cartoon Network is very important, I just couldn't fit it on there. So stuff like Dexter's Lab, Powerpuff Girls, Foster's Home for Imaginary Friends, Adventure Time, Grim Adventures of Billy and Mandy... I love all of those shows.
Adventure Times is for children?
Yeah.
Huh.
I mean, it's beloved by adults, but it's for kids.
Huh.
Yeah.
It's
not on Adult Swim.
I thought it was a Rick and Morty type thing.
No, it's not.
I also thought Rick and Morty was for children at first.
No. Hard pass on that. No, I drew soft a line pass at what was for kids with terms of, like, is it on Adult Swim or not for mm-hmm. Cartoon Network? And Adventure Time is not on Adult Swim.
Yeah, but then Cartoon Network has a lot of Toonami thing, and they're like, children, but... It's a weird thing.
There is many, many shows that could have been my number one. And there's a lot of classics that we didn't even touch on here, such as... so this is kind of my classics era one. So, also on honorable mentions before I get there. I don't have Gravity Falls, and I don't have Steven Universe on my list. And I know that those are two excellent shows from recent era. I've just not seen enough of either show to have a strong, solid opinion. I've seen the first three episodes of each and enjoy both shows, but I've just not gotten past that, so I can't put them on my list.
The reason why they're not on my list is I've never heard of them.
Great! Fantastic.
I'm surprised I know Adventure Time. Well, right? But I apparently don't know it.
There are lots of classic shows that could have made my list as my classic number one spot. Stuff like Speed Racer or Johnny Quest. There's so many things over the years that could have gone there. So I narrowed it down to what are Alvin and the Chipmunks, the kind of 80s cartoon. So I narrowed it down to a production company, and that production company is Hanna-Barbera. And Hanna-Barbera is probably the most iconic cartoon creating company, in terms of things like most of the classic cartoons, from like the Mighty Mouses to the Yogi Bears to, you know, what's that droopy dog? The blue dog's name. Anyway, my two honorable mentions from them are the Jetsons, which I love the Jetsons. I think it's great. But the Jetsons is a derivative of another thing, which we'll talk about here in a second, and Scooby-Doo. Scooby-Doo almost made my list as just a thing that still hangs on, as still a thing that kids still love. And it's those characters of Scooby, Shaggy, Velma, Fred, and Daphne are iconic. Kids know them, they like them. It's a fun show, it's a fun setup. But for me, the one that hangs on the most and what is my number one is the Flintstones. I love this cartoon. Growing up, it's probably the classic that I watched the most. And yes, the Flintstones is just, essentially all it is it's a animated version of the Honeymooners. So if you're that Jackie Gleason show from the 50s, the Honeymooners is basically about a working class guy who deals with working class problems. And it's very based in a 50s sensibility of, you know, the wife stays home and does the cooking and the cleaning and the shopping and the taking care of the kids, and the man goes to work and does the man things like going bowling and sports and hanging out with the buddies in the bar. And then the whole situation comedy comes with the fact that men and women are different people. Great, fine. It's a very simple, trite, out-of-date concept. But what the Flintstones does is, even in the 70s, when the Flintstones, or the late 60s, sorry, it's the 60s and then into the 70s, what the Flintstones does is, even by taking that concept and saying, well, I'm just going to make the same show in prehistoric times, it is, by simply making that choice, commenting on how, even in the late 60s, that is a prehistoric idea. And the only way that it's going to still really work is if I put it back there with the dinosaurs. And I think that's a really interesting way to look at this. And it's a really interesting way to see what the show has done. And yes, it does have some out-of-date values. But it doesn't mean we can't understand the values. It doesn't mean that the situations that are there... I don't want to hold the show's values against the show to the point where I don't like it. Because looking at it in the sense of Fred and Wilma and Barney and Betty, they're just a couple of couples. And whether they believe in that sense of... Yes?
His name's Barney?
Barney?
Oh, I heard Barney.
Sorry, Barney.
And I was like...
Betty and Barney.
I was like, everything I've known is a... No, like, it's Barney. I know exactly four names, and one of them's Barney.
These four, if you look at them as just... They're just two couples. They're just... They are who they are. And putting the gender politics aside for that moment of, well, Wilma could be more than just cooking, cleaning, and taking care of the kids. But in this relationship, she's not. And I think that's fine. Now, it's not... I don't think the show is trying to project these as the values that it wants everybody to have. And if you have this show in a well-rounded diet as a kid of stuff... You're not going to be like, oh, it has to be this way. It has to be male, female. You know, it can be whatever you want it to be. There's a freaking Martian that shows up near the end of this series. So it's fine. Things change. They also do crossover episodes with the Jetsons because of time travel. So it's all good. But I love the characters of this show. I love Fred as this dunderheaded patriarch of this family who has issues and has problems, and everybody around him knows he's adult, and everybody around him knows that he's just trying to do his best, and they're just trying to, you know, like, you're a good man, Charlie Brown, you're gonna get there all right as long as we can all help you out. He's got a wife who loves him, and he's got his best friend, and he's got his daughter who he really wants to take care of, and his over-demanding boss, and it's all just a very standard sitcom. But by putting it in this era of the prehistoric age and of the of Bedrock, you get to have these fun things, like they have a pet dinosaur, or, you know, they work, their cranes or brontosauruses, and they're digging to create the wheel, and it's just really fun, and some of the fun aspects of what they can do with the series. I think the animation is perfect. It's not anything fancy, but it allows for your imagination to fill in the rest. I love some of the sight gags you get of, you know, when you have to, like, open a bottle and it's a bird, or like you're typing having to jab a like stake into a cement slab to write things out. Like, that's how they would have to write because they don't have pen and paper yet. I just think it's really funny and really interesting. And yeah, I've always loved the Flintstones since I was a kid. It's a good show.
I'm questioning whether I should make this admittment or not.
Have you never seen an episode of the Flintstones?
No, because I didn't know it was a TV show for an unfortunately long amount of time. Do you know what I thought the Flintstones was?
The movies?
I thought it was a literal just cereal brand. I thought that Fred and Barney were just cereal mascots. That's and that amazing. There's not actually anything else behind it.
That's amazing.
In case you kids don't know what I'm talking about.
Fruity Pebbles are delicious. Everyone knows what you're talking about.
There's also Cocoa Pebbles.
There is Cocoa Pebbles, but they're not as good as Fruity Pebbles.
So, there was a very long time I was misguided in my ways.
They also have Flintstone Chewables, the vitamins.
I had Sesame Street.
My favorite ones were the grape-flavored Freds. Those were what I wanted.
I enjoyed devouring the puppets. I showed them who was boss.
Good for you.
I know. I ground their bones for my dietary supplements. Alright, everyone, this was our favorite animated shows.
Alright, everyone, if you want to join this conversation, you can do so at friendofafriendpodcast.squarespace.com. You can also do so on Facebook at Friend of a Friend Podcast. You can find us on Apple Podcasts, where you can leave us a 5-star review or any star review, and we will read it live here on the podcast. You can find us on Twitter at
DWT_podcast.
Tumblr at
Ducks Watch Together.
YouTube at
Ducks Watch Together.
Letterboxd at
Darby ACT and Kylie Galsher.
And thank you so much for listening to this episode and any episode. Go back and find our back catalog. It's got some good stuff in there. Thank you again for listening. I've been Josh.
I'm Kylie.
Quack, quack, quack. Quack. Quack.